नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। एवं रुक्षाय स्तुतान् वाक्याय कृष्णं स्तोत्राय इवाद्विपम् गदयाथादयान्मूर्ध्नि सिंहवाद्व्यनदाच्च सः। Thus trying to harass Lord Krishna with harsh words, as one may prick an elephant with sharp goads, Dantavakra struck the Lord on the head with his club and roared like a lion. Although hit by Dantavakra's club, Lord Krishna, the deliverer of the Yadus, did not budge from his place on the battlefield. Rather, with his massive Komodaki club, the Lord struck Dantavakra in the middle of his chest. His heart shattered by the club's blow, Dantavakra vomited blood and fell lifeless to the ground, his hair disheveled, and his arms and legs sprawling. A most subtle and wondrous spark of light then rose from the demon's body and entered Lord Krishna, while everyone looked on. O King, just as when Shishupal was killed. But then Dantavakra's brother, Vidurata, immersed in sorrow over his brother's death, came forward breathing heavily, sword and shield in hand. He wanted to kill the Lord. O best of kings, as Vidurata fell upon him, Lord Krishna used his razor-edged Sudarshan disc to remove his head, complete with its helmets and earrings. Having thus destroyed Shalva and his Soba airship, along with Dantavakra and his younger brother, all of whom were invincible before any other opponent, the Lord was praised by demigods, human beings, and great sages, by Siddhas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, and Mahoragas, and also by Apsaras, Pitas, Yakshas, Kinaras, Chanaras, as they sang his glories and showered him with flowers. The Supreme Lord entered his festively decorated capital city in the company of the most eminent Vrishnis. Evam Yogeshwara Krishno Bhagavan Jagadishwaraha Iyate Pashudristhinam Nirjato Jayati Tisaha. Thus Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all mystic power and Lord of the universe, is ever victorious. Only those of beastly vision think he sometimes suffers defeat. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the following elaborate commentary on this section of Srimad Bhagavatam. Concerning the killing of Dantavakra, the Uttara Khanda of the Padma Purana contains the further details in the following prose passage. Then hearing that Shishupal had been killed, Dantavakra went to Mathura to fight against Krishna. When Krishna, moreover, heard of this, he mounted his chariot and went to Mathura. Between the two of them, Dantavakra and Lord Vasudev, there then began a battle at the gate of Mathura that lasted all day and night. Finally, Krishna struck Dantavakra with his club, at which point Dantavakra fell lifeless to the ground, all his limbs smashed like a mountain shattered by a lightning bolt. Dantavakra achieved the liberation of gaining a form equal to the Lord's, and thus he also achieved the Lord's eternal supreme abode, attainable by perfect yogis, which bestows the happiness of everlasting bliss. So it was that Jai and Vijay, apparently because of being cursed by Sanaka and his brothers, but actually to facilitate the Supreme Lord's pastimes, descended to the material world in three consecutive lifetimes, were killed by the Lord himself. Then at the completion of these three lifetimes, they attained liberation. In this passage of the Padma Purana, the words, "When Krishna heard of this," indicate that the Lord heard from Narada, who travels as swiftly as the mind, that Dantavakra had gone to Mathura. Therefore, immediately after killing Shalva, without first entering Dwarka, the Lord reached the vicinity of Mathura in a single moment on his chariot, which also moves as swiftly as the mind. And there he saw Dantavakra. Thus it is that even today, by the gate of Mathura, facing the direction of Dwarka, there is a village known in the vernacular as Datiha, a name derived from the Sanskrit Dantavakraha, killer of Dantavakra. This village was founded by Krishna's great-grandson, Vajra. In the same section of the Padma Purana, these statements follow. And after killing him, Vidurata, Krishna crossed the Yamuna and went to the cowherd village of Nanda, where he honored and consoled his aggrieved parents. They drenched him with tears and embraced him. And then the Lord offered obeisances to the elder cowherd men and gratified all the residents with abundant gifts of clothing, ornaments, and so on. Hare Krishna. We are reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Text 78. Chapter 78, text 7 through 16. We heard yesterday from that very esteemed scholarly Vaishnav Garuda Prabhu, who is humbly gracing us with his presence this morning, about the beautiful poetic expressions of love that are revealed in the great Vaishnava literatures. The Vedas are not just spoken they are sung. And even such passages that we're reading today, this Sanskritam poetry, is limitlessly sweet. In this material world, we usually think something sweet when it's very romantic, when it's glorifying the beauty of nature or the beauty of people. But here we find limitlessly more beautiful poetry as it's describing Dantavakra falling to the ground and vomiting blood with his hair scattered in all directions. How is this? Why is this? Because everything Krishna does is perfect. Everything Krishna does is absolute on a spiritual platform and all good. When we describe the beauty of a sunset, we should know as we're describing the beauty of the sunset, we're simultaneously one day closer to death. That's material life. As we're composing poetry about the beauty of someone's features, we should know that in the course of time, at that very moment, everything about that body is deteriorating, disintegrating. And within a short period of time, it will either be the stool for birds or the ashes derived from fire or eaten by worms under the ground. So the beautiful things in this world, dukalayam ashashvatam, are not really very beautiful at all when we see it only from the perspective of its appearance. But here, Dantavakra, Krishna's smashing him with his club. He's falling to the ground. He's roaring like a lion, and it's not a very nice sound that he's making. He's vomiting blood. His eyes are bulging. His hair scattered. He falls to the ground. It's like an earthquake. It's really beautiful because he's getting liberated. How beautiful is that? His eternal soul is going back to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha to enter into Krishna's pastimes. So whatever Krishna does is all beautiful, it's all perfect. Because Krishna, in every situation, in whatever activities he performs, he's all merciful. He always acts for the ultimate well-being of all living beings. Krishna tells in Gita, he's equal to everyone, but he reciprocates according to how we approach him. So Dantavakra is now dead, and a light comes from his body and enters Krishna, just as his cousin Shishupal. And we understand this is a very historical event, because throughout the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, throughout the Vedic histories, we find over spans of long time in Satya Yuga, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha. In the next Yuga, Treta Yuga, was Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And now in the Dwapara Yuga, just at the end, just prior to Kali Yuga, Shishupal and Dantavakra. The same eternal jivatmas, or souls, are in all three of these bodies. Over a span of millions of years, they're taking birth. They're conquering. They're destroying so much of the good of the world. And then their activities are ended by Narasingha Dev, Varaha Dev, Ramchandra, the help of Hanuman and the other monkeys. And here Krishna. But finally, they're going back to their eternal abode of Vaikuntha. So it's a very glorious, when we understand what's behind the scenes. Apparently they're terrible demons who have terrorized human society and they're being killed. But internally, they're loving associates of the Lord, assisting the Lord in his pastimes. And the way they're assisting him, for great devotees, gentle, kind-hearted, to become such demons, so notorious, it's not exactly what devotees like to do. But they were willing to do, to assist the Lord in his pastimes. Imagine the type of service they had to perform. Devotees would rather die than commit an aparadha to another Vaishnava. It's the most horrible thing. When you love Krishna, you love his devotees. It's an inconceivable pain to think of causing harm to another Vaishnava. And here are these great devotees from Vaikuntha blaspheming Prahlad, throwing him in pits of snakes, throwing him in fire, throwing him off cliffs, throwing him in the ocean, stabbing him with spears, trying to terrorize him, giving him poison. What kind of devotee wants to do that to a Mahabhagavat? Prahlad, a Mahajan. Jai and Vijay, they did it in the service of the Lord. Of course, they were really covered over. They were under the misconception they were Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha and all these demons. But still, the Krishna, Lord Narayan, gave them those bodies so that they can assist him in performing the most incredible, beautiful, wonderful pastimes to attract the world back home, back to Godhead, in his loving service. So in the path of bhakti, as well as within this material world altogether, the tendency is just to see things black and white. But there are so many subtleties in between that black and white. And the truth, how to please Krishna, and the rasas, or the opportunities of loving exchange between the devotee and Krishna, is so often within those subtleties. So, after this incredible history of Jai and Vijay falling from Vaikuntha, entering into these demoniac forms, now finally they are liberated. It's glorious. What wonderful poetry with such an incredible message. Not only does the message tell us the historical closure to the curse that was given to Jai and Vijay, but it also gives infinite hope to every single one of us. Because whatever the Lord does fulfills multi-purposes.
even such cruel, terrible people by remembering Krishna can get the highest liberation. Dinahina yate chilo harinamu dharilo tara sakshi jagai madhai. Even Jagai and Madhai, who were every bit as cruel, wicked, and envious as these asuras were speaking about, because they chanted the holy name and took shelter of the Lord with humility, they were given pure devotional service. This is the power of devotional service. This is the power of Krishna's grace. After Dantavakra, his soul enters Krishna. Vidurata comes, his brother, who's really angry. Salva was killed, Pondraka was killed, Shishupal was killed, all the best friends. And now his own brother. Now, it would seem that someone like Vidurata, seeing all these people killed by Krishna, Kamsa was killed by him, Jarasandha was killed by Krishna's devotee, Bhima. Krishna, with one blow of his club, just destroyed his older brother, Shalva, his incredible, unbelievable airship, the most mystically powerful weapon anybody has ever seen. Krishna just destroyed it. Why didn't Vidurata think that, what is my hope to fight Krishna if all these others were destroyed so effortlessly by him? But it's the nature of the false ego. It's the nature of the anartas of lust and anger, envy, greed, arrogance, and illusion, that they cover our intelligence. Bhagavad Gita tells like that. Especially anger covers our intelligence. We don't think rationally anymore. Envy covers our intelligence so much. We can create entire, Duryodhana and others like this who were envious, they created entire systems of rationalization and logic and propaganda to prove their point. But they couldn't see that they're just envious. They really thought that they were right. And this is the way the ego could be. Some of the greatest tyrants in the world, when we read about their cruelty, their atrocities, sometimes we fail to think that they really thought that they were doing the right thing. One of my godbrothers was telling me his father was an officer in the German army during World War II. And he knew the person who was the masseur, who would massage the particular commander under Hitler, who was actually the brains behind and the organ behind the extermination of the Jewish race. And as he was being massaged, he was telling his massager about the importance of ahimsa, nonviolence.
He was describing how Buddha gave this very, very important instruction and how the Vedas give this very important instruction. He was a vegetarian, the person. He was just going on and on about you should become vegetarian, you should practice ahimsa, you can't harm any living being, you'll get your karma back and all that. And the person massaging him and said, why are you killing all these millions of Jewish people? You know, men, women, children in concentration camps, right? And, you know, just in gunpoint and gas chambers. How does that connect with ahimsa? And the person paused for a few minutes, and then he spoke. Would you like to hear what he said? That was very wonderful. You know, 100 adults said Hari Bol, nobody cared. But one little innocent child says Hari Bol and our hearts are captured. He said, it is very unfortunate, but for the sake of the future of humanity, we just have to do it. What does that mean? He really felt that it was just the right thing to do. Yes, it's wrong, but it was for a higher purpose. So we just have to do it. So this is how the false ego can work, when we're covered by envy, when we're covered by arrogance, when we're covered by illusion. We really think we're right. And we have so many rationalizations and logic, and we believe it. Even Hiranyakashipu, when Hiranyaksha was killed by Varahadev, the whole family, the mother of Hiranyaksha, the wife of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, they all thought Vishnu was such an evil person. Our father, our husband, Hiranyaksha, was such a good person. We must get revenge. They're actually thinking like that. So we have to be very careful to be guided by the scriptures, to be guided by the saints. Mahajano yena gatasa panda, to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Tadvidipana nipatina pariprasnena sevaya. We submit ourselves before our gurus and we hear submissively and we try to carry out what they're speaking. Because if we're not seeing through the eyes of the scriptures through self-realized souls, then whoever we are, our egos will deceive us. And as His Holiness Devamrita Swami Maharaj was speaking yesterday, most of these great asuras were scholars of the Vedas. They were real pundits of Sanskritam. And when they spoke, when you read Ramayana, everything Ravana speaks is poetry. As is Hiranyakashipu. It's their words. They're incredible. Hiranyakashipu is quoting so many scriptures about the eternal nature of the soul, about the nature of karma. But they were interpreting the scriptures through the lens of their arrogance, their false egos.
and they were misconstruing it. And we see even today, Srila Prabhupada has given us his books, and there are so many divisions of devotees, even causing animosity on different interpretations of the same lines, of the same purports of Srila Prabhupada's books. And people are quoting the same things with very, very different meanings. This is how powerful the false ego is. Unless we really are humble with a desire to serve and hearing from self-realized souls who are humble with a desire to serve, then everything could be tainted. Not only it could be, it will be. On so many levels. Certainly debate, certainly disagreements to go deeper into Shastric understandings is very favorable. But it should not, but if it's done properly, it's to go deeper with respect, not inimically. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he describes the various demons of Vrindavan, he describes after Krishna danced on the hoods of Kaliya and made Kali a great devotee, then the Vrijabhasis, who were so much concerned about Krishna when he was in the coils of Kaliya just shortly before, they just wanted to be with Krishna. And so they decided, we'll sleep all together on the banks of the Yamuna tonight. How beautiful that is. Under the Kadamba trees, the Tamal trees, the Banyan trees. Mother Yamuna with her lotus flowers flowing. The fragrance of the Vrindavan flowers are filling the air. They're all with Krishna. It's just the most pleasant experience. Suddenly, massive fire. They wake up. And when they wake up, there's flames that are literally reaching the stars. Have you ever seen a fire like that? They were surrounded on four sides by a massive wall of fire. Where was the fuel of the fire coming from to have such fire? There was no gas inlets. There was no wood or cow dung. It was just fire. Unbelievable fire. How do you put out a fire like that? And the Vrijabhasis and the cows and the calves, they turn to Krishna. And within a moment, so for Krishna, he didn't need to call fire brigades. Just one simple, one effortless inhalation, the entire fire goes into his mouth. Hare Krishna. And it's not like he got burnt or anything. It's gone. That's Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, what does that fire represent? The communal discord within Vaishnav community. So many reasons to fight. Politicians are fighting. Nations are fighting. Races are fighting, sexes are fighting, companies are fighting. In this world, so much fighting. And yet we say, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. But even yogis who say that are usually fighting. That's the nature of this world. It's a world of fighting. But even if devotees are competing with each other, it should not create discord. If Krishna's in the center, even if we have disagreements, there will be a higher unity. That is Krishna consciousness. So Vidurata, he was completely justified. He was convinced that he was going to defeat Krishna, even though everything around him was obvious that he didn't have a chance. Besides everybody that Krishna already killed, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. So we should humble ourselves to understand how we are vulnerable to Maya, how we may not always be right about our assumptions, about others, about ourselves, justifications, rationalizations. We need guidance. And even great souls, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted a guru. And when he was with Prakashananda Saraswati in Varanasi, Prakashananda Saraswati said, "You are a sannyasi? You are in the sampradayas of Shankaracharya? Why are you doing this chanting and dancing with all these sentimental common people? Why are you not with us studying Vedanta with our commentaries?" And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, "My guru, he told me I'm a fool. I will never understand these things. So I have taken my guru's words very seriously that I'm a fool. And he told me I should just chant the holy names of Krishna." This is how Lord Chaitanya approached his guru. Of course, after he said that, and he completely conquered the hearts of these sannyasis with his humility and his compassion, then he spoke Vedanta with such precision, with such eloquence, with such comprehensive full realization that they surrendered. Vedaishcha sarvera hameva vidyo vedanta krit beda vedeva cha. Krishna, who appeared as Lord Chaitanya, as the knower of the Vedas, the compiler of the Vedas, whom all the Vedas are only to know him. And yet that personality is publicly saying that my guru said I'm a fool, and I am a fool. Why? To teach us. So Vidurata attacks Krishna. And Krishna, with his Sudarshan chakra, and then the natural consequence. His head falls to the ground. And it's all described in Sanskritam poetry. But it's so beautiful. You know, we may think this is an ugly thing, but it's actually, when Krishna does it, it's actually beautiful. It's more beautiful than any Bollywood movie or anything like this. His head comes off, and it falls to the ground, and he has beautiful earrings and a crown. It's described here. Whatever Krishna does is so pleasing to the heart. Even the Srimad Bhagavatam describes in certain places when Krishna's on the battlefield, he's soldiers and there's
blood flowing like rivers and floating in the river of blood as heads and helmets and animals. Garuda Prabhu is in ecstasy hearing about these things. So from a material sense, this is like a horror movie. This is terrible. This is disgusting. You know, you can't, like, can you imagine eating nice parathas and halwa and seeing this river flow by with all these heads and elephants and horses and arms and legs and trunks of bodies floating? It's the most horrid scene possible. But when Shukadeva Goswami describes it, he describes it as being so beautiful, so sweet. It's more beautiful than seeing the sunrise on a clear day over the Arabian Sea. Because Krishna, whatever he does is so beautiful and so perfect. Whatever he does attracts our heart to love him if we're his devotees. So now Vidurata is liberated. And it describes in this beautiful purport the explanation of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who's quoting from Padma Purana. Describes herein that Shukadeva Goswami did not describe the details of what we're about to speak to Parikshit Maharaj. The reason? Because he's going to tell how Krishna entered into Braj Bhumi, Sri Vrindavan Dham, and brought all his associates back home, back to Godhead, back to Goloka Vrindavan. Now, Parikshit Maharaj understood the Yadus, who he is related to. How did they wind up their pastimes on this earth? They had a fratricidal war. They got cursed. And then they fought against each other. And that's how they left the world. And Vrindavan, the beautiful description we're about to speak, was so sweet. Parikshit Maharaj may think, why did the Brijabasis have such a beautiful way of going back to Goloka? And my Yadus didn't seem so auspicious. Why is this? So Sukadeva Goswami was very sensitive. So he just referred to this passage. But if we want to understand its details, the Padma Purana gives it. Would you like to understand the details? No. After Krishna killed Shalva, then Narada Muni came to Krishna before he even entered back into Dwarka. And Narada Muni told him that Dantavakra is raging mad because he just heard about your killing Salva. Now this is from the gates of Dwarka to Mathura. That's quite distance. They didn't have internet in those days. Nobody text messaged him. They had much better communication.
These were powerful yogis. The word spread really fast. And Dantavakra was attacking. He was attacking. And he was just in the gates of Mathura.
So Krishna instantly appeared just at the outer gate of Mathura, where Dantavakra was really angry. And after he liberated the two brothers, Krishna took the opportunity. He crossed the Yamuna and entered into Sri Vrindavan Dham. Ever since Balaramji went to Vrindavan and spent 2 months and had Rasleela with his gopis, loving exchanges with Nanda, Yashoda, all his old friends, the gopas. He gave his beautiful darshan and lovingly reciprocated with the cows and the bulls and the calves and all the trees. The whole of Vrindavan was in their separation from Krishna. We're so happy to be reunited with Balaramji. And Balaramji returned to Dwarka and gave message to Krishna how everyone is missing you. They are in so much separation. Uddhava explained to Krishna, they're dying without you, and I promised you would come. Please go. But Krishna would, the inhabitants of Dwarka would not allow Krishna to go. Then Balaram went. And when Sri Balaramji came back, they're dying without you. Please go. I promised them. But Krishna didn't go. After so long of separation, Krishna couldn't just go and then leave them again. So he entered Vrindavan. And he entered in such a way that he was not coming as of the way they saw him in Kurukshetra. He wasn't coming as a royal prince. He was coming just as they knew him, just as they loved him. He re-entered Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. Practically just taking up where they left off. Vipralamba Sambhog. These two principles nourish each other. Vipralamba is love and separation. It only makes sambhog bhav, the love of reunion, that much sweeter. When you're missing someone and then you meet them again, it's so much sweeter than just being together. And the sambhog nourishes the vipralamba bhav, because when we're together, it ignites, it excites, it intensifies the relationship, so that when separation is there, it's that much more intensified. So after so long and so many promises, Krishna returns to Vrindavan. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, they're embracing him, they're weeping on him. You're home, you're finally home, and you're our Govinda again. They heard so many stories how he killed Kamsa, and he killed so many other asuras and Dwarka, and he was with armies, and now he's again our little cowherd boy, Krishna. Krishna so lovingly, he offered his obeisances and touched the feet of his elders. He blessed his juniors. He joked and played intimately with his friends. And Krishna performed wonderful, wonderful pastimes with the gopas, Subala, Arjuna, Stoka Krishna, Sudama, Sridama. Great reunion with all the cows and the calves. It's not that they all aged either. That's pretty interesting. It's not that now they were all old men, like, I'm not going to mention names, but Devamrita Maharaj was talking about someone yesterday. Last time I saw you, you had black hair. Now only white hairs. I didn't mention any names. I didn't point. So it's not when Krishna came back to Vrindavan after so many years, you know, Sridhama was an old gray-haired man. He's eternally youthful. Huh? They all were as they were. And Krishna remained in Vrindavan for 2 months, intimately reciprocating with everyone to fulfill their every desire. And for Sri Radha and the Braja Gopis, Krishna intimately, lovingly performed wonderful pastimes for 2 continuous months on the banks of Yamuna, which was the most pious kalpavriksha trees on her banks. They sang together, they danced together. Sri Radha and Gopis offered flowers, songs, everything for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna continuously performed the most sweet pastimes, everything for the pleasure of his gopis. Those 2 months, so wonderful. And they are described in Sanskritam poetry. After having his beautiful reciprocations with all the devotees, he was obliged to return to Dwarka. He could not leave the Brijavasis again. When he left the first time with Akrura, he promised them he'd come back. And it took so long. His Holiness Srila Gaura Govinda Maharaj, he describes in his book The Embankment of Separation, when Srimati Radharani was speaking to Uddhava at the Uddhav Kyari near Nandagaon, she was speaking to a bumblebee as the messenger of Krishna. That Krishna left, and my body is on fire, my mind is on fire, blazing in separation from Krishna. And my atma, my soul, is being scorched and burnt by this blazing fire. But I can't die. I can't leave this body because there's a bolt on the door that won't let me escape. And what is that bolt? That Krishna promised he would return. That promise is the only thing that keeps me alive. But how long will it be? So here Krishna is playing the most loving pastimes with the gopas and the gopis. And after the 2 months, Krishna manifests the most incredible divine chariots, where Nanda, Yashoda, Vrishabhanu, Kirtida, Sri Radha, gopis, gopas, all their friends, all their children, everyone, and their original spiritual bodies. Krishna personally brought them all to what the Padma Purana describes as the highest of all the Vaikuntha planets, Goloka. After bringing them back home, back to Godhood, to Goloka Vrindavan, in their self-same bodies, Krishna simultaneously remains in Vrindavan with his most eternal loving associates. Because the Gokul Vrindavan of this world is none different than Goloka, and the Nitya Leela is happening. But it is simply unmanifested to the physical eyes. On the spiritual level, Krishna continues his eternal pastimes in the Vrindavan of the Boma Vrindavan of this earth. At the same time, he's leaving his associates in the Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. And at the same time, he's returning to Dwarka. They're all happening. That is Krishna. When we think about God being great, it's such an inconceivable subject. Srila Prabhupada explained the first understanding of God is achintya shakti, that he has inconceivable potencies. He cannot be confined to what's possible for us to understand. Let's just take a little journey in meditation on what Krishna is doing at every moment. He's having beautiful pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan. And he's having beautiful pastimes in Gokul Vrindavan right now, just a few hundred kilometers from here. At the same time, that same Krishna is having incredible pastimes in the various Vaikuntha planets. Ram, Varaha, Narasingha. At the same, Narayan. At the same time, he's Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, Mahavishnu. And he's sleeping in a mystical sleep, and he's exhaling and creating entire cosmic manifestation. Then he's inhaling and destroying it. At the same time, he's Garbo Dakshayi Vishnu, and he's giving birth to Brahma. At the same time, he's Kshiro Dakshayi Vishnu, and he's entering into the heart of every living being, and he's watching every living being and the entire cosmic manifestation and all the universes. He knows he's watching our every desire. He's hearing our every word. He's just waiting for us to surrender. At the same time, he's incarnating in all these different incarnations within the world. Srila Prabhupada quotes Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami that at every time in some universe, all the incarnations are always happening. He's coming, he's Ram, he's getting exiled, he's fighting Ravana, he's embracing Hanuman, he's Varaha. And it describes all these different incarnations. They're like waves in the ocean. He's the same person. He's doing all of them simultaneously. In the form of time,
The Kala Rupa, which is a manifestation of Krishna, he's destroying everything. He's manifesting his universal form somewhere, everywhere, in some universes. He's doing all these things right now. These are serious matters too. In this world, we might be very proud that I can do multitasking. Right? You know, I could be managing, you know, a project. I could be answering serious questions on email. I can be giving some direction to someone simultaneously on a cell phone, all at the same time, while I'm eating dal and rice. Who can do what I'm doing? I can be eating, I could be managing, I can be at a meeting, I could be doing emails, I could be talking on the telephone. So what? Simply infinitesimal. If we compare ourselves to somebody else who can't do all those things, and simultaneously I'm chanting my rounds. I've seen devotees do all these things. I'm not just creating something. I'm just speaking what I have seen. Well, what is Krishna doing? Simultaneously, everything. And just in this little story, while he's in the heart of every living being, while he's creating all universes, while he's incarnating in every incarnation simultaneously, while he's performing leelas in every Vaikuntha planet, and while he's reciprocating with each and every devotee in every planet, here he is. He's simultaneously having his aprakata leela, his unmanifested leela in Vrindavan. On a physical level, the prakata, he's bringing everyone back to Goloka Vrindavan, same time. And he's going back to Dwarka to meet all the Vrishnis and the Yadus. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is just presenting to us these most precious jewels of wisdom, of the rasas, of Krishna's loving reciprocations, his infinite, inconceivable loving relationships with his devotees. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, during Krishna's Ras Leela, when he was in Vrindavan, there were gopis who were being held forcibly to not go to the Bamsiba tree in the forest on the bank of Jamuna. And those gopis were burning so inconceivably with separation from Krishna, remembering, so immersed in remembrance of him. They left their physical bodies. Actually, they had spiritual bodies, but they just left those spiritual, physical bodies within this world and joined Krishna in his Ras Leela in Goloka Vrindavan. This is how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees.
When we remember Krishna with love, everything becomes auspicious. There's a beautiful verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, when we chant Krishna's holy names with sincere devotion, everything becomes all auspicious. It really doesn't matter what astrology says. Your astrologer may say this is the most inauspicious time. And the most inauspicious things may be happening. There may be jackals on your right side going, pew, pew. There may be meteors falling from the sky. There may be solar eclipses shining on your head. Everything inauspicious. But if you're remembering Krishna's name with sincerity, everything is supremely auspicious. Sharanagati. When we take shelter of Krishna, everything becomes all auspicious. And if everything materially, karmically, astrologically, and everything else is totally auspicious, if we're forgetting Krishna, if we're not taking shelter of his name, everything is totally inauspicious. Devotees don't calculate things. Devotees can, because we have to live in this world, devotees could utilize information of auspicious and inauspicious within this world. But ultimately, the only truly auspicious thing there is to surrender to Krishna. Because auspicious or inauspicious, you're still dying. Sarva dharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam vraja, aham tvam sarva papebho moksha ishami masaja. But if we surrender to Krishna, there's no fear. And surrender, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it so accessible to all of us. With humility, with forgiveness, with attention. Like that little child, when we cry Krishna's names, understanding our total dependence, then everything becomes supremely auspicious. His Grace Garuda Prabhu yesterday spoke us to us the most secret of all secrets, the very heart of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna, and through Arjuna he tells each and every one of us, you are very dear to me. I love you. Krishna loves us. And that makes everything auspicious, supremely auspicious. To reciprocate with that love is what is the message that Srila Prabhupada has brought us. Thank you very much.